where we're like, oh, we're doing like 80 grand. This is good. We suddenly jump to turning over 110, 115. And I'm like, oh, this is a headache.
Yeah. It's almost like you need someone to go, let me train you for 6 months out to run a business.
Yeah.
And then we'll open up. Whereas we kind of open, you think, oh, shit, like, I've got to be the accountant, I've got to be the marketer, I've got to be the doctor and the hairdresser and barber.
We're working stylists. We work, we still cut hair, still do appointments every single day. It's easy to kind of come to these sort of shows and then just want that without having to see the journey.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we are at HairCon 2025 in Manchester. These guys have just come off stage. I am here with Cal Newson. Thank you so much, Cal. And Dean Gleeson. Thank you. Obviously, you know, you've been on stage here. It's been amazing. But I want to just dip back to maybe more to the beginning where you guys, you know, a little bit about where you train, but really I didn't realize that you both opened shops really within a year or two of each other. You opened stores in your early 20s. Can we talk about that a little bit and how that's grown for you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I kind of hit a point. I got trained by Ad Sloan, MH Fed. I went through my whole career with him to start off with. And I was fortunate enough with doing some stuff with him early in my career, show work and getting a kind of a taste for it. But then I just hit a point where I wanted my own kind of creative freedom. So I kind of opened up, but I had no idea what I was doing. Knew what I wanted to do, but didn't have a clue how to do it. So went into a partnership, set up, kind of blagged it for the first few years, and then we kind of found our feet. I know, Cal, you're all kind of similar. It's like,
I'm listening to what you're saying there. I was the same. I don't know what the term is, not a fish to water, but like the opposite. I was literally like thrown in. I started learning how to cut hair. It was the kind of new rise of like the gentleman barbers. It was like braces, ties, like that whole slick back, high skin fade, that whole scorum look. That's the sort of barbershop that I learned to cut hair in. And as soon as I got my qualification, I basically just was like, well, I want to open my own shop.
Yeah.
And I opened a little room, basically. Well, I couldn't even call it a shop. It was a little room with a chair and a sofa. And it was in a town, my hometown, where there wasn't many barbershops. And straight away, I was like, oh, I'm going to do walk-ins. Straight away, I was like bombarded with people.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't know how to cut hair. You don't know how to cut hair straight out the back of college.
And not on the churn like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? When you've been training, you've got ample time to work your way through. All of a sudden, you've got six blokes queuing up waiting for you.
But that's something we miss out on. Like, we get this excitement, we open up, and we know it's something we want to do, but it's almost like you need someone to go, let me train you for 6 months out to run a business, and then we'll open up. Whereas we kind of open, you think, oh, shit, like, I've got to be the accountant, I've got to be the marketer, I've got to be the doctor and the hairdresser and barber. So it's, I mean, it's a fun journey, but now, like, getting a chance to do it again with a new place, all the, not mistakes, but the kind of learning curves I've made in the first place, from day one now, I'm not going to be able to have to make those. I'm going to know what foot to put forward first.
Yeah, so you're about to open up your new independent.
Yeah, second one. So it's, I had a partnership for 10 years, and it's, and I was just talking about it, but it's interesting because when you tell people you're splitting partnership, they think there must be a bust up. They think there's got to have been this big fallout, but all this purely come down to is a difference in creative visions. I'm doing my stuff with Wild, I'm doing my stuff with social media, and I've kind of hit a point where I want to go in one direction and my business partner wanted to go in a different. So we're in the same town still. The shops are 200 yards away from each other.
10 years together, that's a very successful partnership.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, there's not a lot of relationships made it 10 years.
That's the beauty of the industry. I think that like what you're saying, people have different values and different directions about where they want to go and where they want to take their career. Some people want to strive for success in terms of doing stage work, being big on social media. And some people are just happy to just run a business and cut hair and just make money, which is, there's no right or wrong way of doing it. It's just
When did the change happen for you, though? So you're in, if we can just go back for that for just a minute.
Yeah.
You're in your tiny little room
yeah.
with your chair and a sofa. When did that change? When did you work with other people? When did you bring other people in? When did you move?
So initially I decided to get an apprentice just to help me kind of do all the stuff that I was learning on the job, like getting change.
That's brilliant, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like
getting
change for the till, going to get my dinner when I've got like 10 people waiting. And it's like little things like that. But then it soon, I was lucky enough that I actually chose an apprentice that was really passionate and wanted to learn how to cut hair. So essentially we learned together. And then when he was ready to cut hair, that's when I expanded my shop and moved to a bigger shop. And I think that because he was actually 10 years younger than me. So when I was 23 at this point, so it was quite, I suppose, mid-20s, like, he was a spring chicken at like 15, 16.
Yeah, yeah.
So like,
that's immense, isn't
he? He had the like drive to want to, and he had the knowledge of social media and how social media worked. And I think his mindset kind of like rubbed off on me eventually. And that's when I started to like really
I think it helps having your own shop as well, though. We had a discussion about this at dinner yesterday because we've all been through it at one point or another with our partners where it gets a bit rocky because we're going off, we're doing all these shows, you're traveling. And when it happens when you work for someone else. You come home and you go, oh, my fucking boss has said this or done that. You're in full control of that then. You can control. You are your own boss.
Yeah.
And it's something we discussed last night at dinner with Alan Beak. And it was like, we give people here our best versions. When we're on stage, they get our best versions. You then get home and you go, oh, I'm so tired. I've had such a long weekend. And they think, great, I've had three kids for the weekend. You've just walked in the door like, and you're depleted. So I get it, like it's tough. So that's why for me, having my own shop, it was my chance to think, right, I can set my own hours, I can make my own money, I can control what I want to do. And if I've got the ump with someone, it's going to be myself. It's not going to be a boss telling me I've got to do certain hours or use a certain product or work for a certain brand. It's, I've got full control of that destiny then.
Yeah. But I think that's, you know, I mean, I think are you still in touch with your apprentice that you had? Eager 15-year-old who's now.
So my first apprentice is now my business partner in a different venture.
But you know, these are brilliant stories that you genuinely don't get in other industries. No. You know, I mean, you always seem to hear about the big breakup and he's gone up the road because the chair's £5 less a week, and it all seems to be, you hear this kind of seething anger that someone's robbing you. And it's been so nice, you know, an amicable split, a partnership
all my
born
partner,
from nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, these are such strong stories.
Like my business partner, we went to school together. So we went to school together, trained by Ed Sloan, same shop. And then we just hit a point where we're same age, wanted to open up, very similar visions at the beginning. And that's why now, like, it's, you're mature enough to sit down and go, look, this is what I want to do. This is what you want to do. But we've hit a point where, like, he come and picked the shop with me.
Oh,
he's come down, he's seen the shop, he's had a look at the interior. If I'm busy, I'll say, go down to Mengo, get your haircut there.
Yeah.
Or vice versa, he'll send them up to me because we've grown that business together. So there's no point in him saying, you can't have those clients, because they're going to follow me anyway.
Yeah.
Same way as if he left, they'd follow him. So I think the industry's changing now where it's gone, coming away from the dog eat dog so much.
Yeah.
Like, here's a prime example.
It's been amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, amazing.
It's been really incredible, the vibe and the warmth from everyone.
Yeah.
And like I say, great stories. I was chatting with Killian and Danny Robinson yesterday, who are opening up a by association.
Yeah.
You know, there are nice, healthy relationships that come together, come apart, and then they've come back together again. What happens though for you, like your studio, your partner's working there, has been working there this weekend, or?
Yeah, so I say he's a business partner. He's a business partner in the product brand that we've just launched. The business, the shop is still my business, and he rents a space off me.
Right.
And he has done for like the last 11 years, essentially. So we decided to launch a product brand because we've worked alongside each other. And I feel like, obviously, he's worked within my business since I started. So he is technically, he is as much my business as I am. So I wanted something that we could build together long term. But yeah, he's actually, I'll give him a shout out. His name's Jay Roberts. And like, he's big in his own right within the industry as a barber, as a stylist. And now we've got this together. So it's just a really cool, like, a cool relationship.
They're an unfairly good-looking couple of guys as well. Like, it's a...
I'd be thorn between two roses. Give me a break. So with your new shout, I mean, are any of the staff from Mengo coming over? Have you done a nice, clean,
fresh team? Because I didn't want to go down that route. Like, as much as I'm going to take my clients, I didn't want to shatter the the business we'd built
and
together.
Kill it, yeah.
So it's my creative vision that's going off in a new direction. So I
and
thought,
it's
right,
you with your clients that stays behind.
It's my clients, but I'm taking more people on. There's a few people in the pipeline that are coming down, but I'm going to focus solely on people that I want around me. Not I didn't want the people around me, but what happened in the last place is we had a lot of workhorses. Great barbers want to slog it out 5 days a week, whereas me, I want a team that want to come do events like this.
Yeah.
They want to...
This is a different breed,
yeah,
isn't it?
They want to do photo shoots, want to do collections, because I'm very impressionable. If I'm around a flat team that don't want to do any of this, all of a sudden I then start thinking, oh yeah, maybe I don't need to go. Yeah, maybe I'll take a weekend off. Whereas that's what I love, like being here, working the shows, being on stage, because you're just getting lights that excitement
The people around you are a direct influence on the way you do things.
Yeah.
And like, I think that you grow together. Like there's no sort of competition with the people around you. I suppose there is a competition, but it's a healthy competition.
Yeah.
You're growing together.
Well, we talk daily, don't we?
All the time.
We've known each other in the industry. Like we started working together a while and it's like, but now it's, we'll just bounce off each other. And it's, I think that's what
it's about. You need that connection. You need that connection with someone.
And I think you can get, as business owners, it's really easy to kind of become isolated.
Yeah.
That you're kind of, you're standing there right at the top, taking the kind of shots.
Yeah.
And then dealing with, like you say, the marketing, the account and so on. Be able to reach out. I've always done it. I think reaching out to other people in your industry and hearing that they're going through the same.
Yeah.
The feedback we get from this podcast is so nice to hear. You know, so-and-so's gone through exactly the same as I have. I thought I was on my own. To have those external relationships.
Like, especially
really
for the youngsters,
powerful.
Because we effectively end up being like business partners within our own rights. Because I'll say, like, I'm thinking about doing this in my business. What do you think? So you end up having an involvement in each other's work indirectly. Because like, with your brand and like, the stuff I do in my shop, you'll ask advice and then ends up imprinting. So I think we need to get away from like, I can't tell you what I'm doing in case you copy it. Lean into it.
Everyone's got something to offer. Like everyone's different in their own right. Like the way that we educate is completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
The way we cut hair is completely different.
Yeah.
And it's like, but that's the beauty of the industry. That's what I love about this event as well, because there's so many different styles. And like, I've never been to an event that I've networked so much. Like Dean knows everyone in the industry. Like you walk around with Dean and it's like, he knows every single person. And I'm like, I don't know.
But it's strange here because I'd say we're what, 80% hairdressers, 20% barbers, maybe
a bit less.
Maybe
less
90,
barbers,
10, something like that. So it's a very hair-based thing.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing lots of the hairdressers engaging with the barbers.
Yeah,
that knowing the audience, watching the shows out there, it's hairdressers watching you guys much as anything else.
That's the amazing
thing.
Which
is incredible. It really is.
As barbers, we're intrigued by the hairdressing industry.
Yeah.
And the hairdressers are obviously intrigued by the barbering industry, which is, that's the way it should be. It shouldn't
be
separated.
I know we spoke about it last time, but it's a big thing that I've focused on. I know you do it as well. Like we're saying we know people here, but it's because for a good year, I just made myself talk to people because people buy into people. There's no point me going up on stage or Cal going up on stage and doing a really class haircut, and then someone comes up and goes, oh, can you just tell me how to do that? You think, oh, fuck off, mate, I'm not on stage anymore. And that's what we've lent into. Like, I'll go around, I'll talk to brands, I'll spend time with people, I'll network with people, like even people like yourself. Like, we love doing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's what the industry is about for me, is meeting people, networking people, rather than kind of shrugging it off and thinking, oh, I'm tired, I don't want to talk to you.
Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say, I think that's why it's important with social media as well. Like we've spoke about, to involve yourself, like show your personality, because when you come to events like this, people then recognize you and see you because they've seen your face on social media. They then feel like they know you and you can have a chat with them. That's why it's really important to show your personality and talk to people.
But I think that's a bit though, you can seem like the most sociable person in the world on social media.
Yeah.
But come here, there's so many people that aren't engaging, that aren't shaking hands, aren't going up and talking. And if you do, I've just discovered, from day one, that as soon as you speak to people, they talk back to you. It's a very welcoming audience.
There's nothing more powerful than going up and shaking someone's hand. You can DM people and you can talk to people, but going up, looking someone in the eye, putting your arm around them and shaking their hand, that will remind
proper
them.
Proper connection.
Yeah, they'll stand there and think,
so before we move on, because there's loads to get through, biggest mistake, biggest learn, biggest thing to share about opening up your stores in your early 20s? Anything that you think is worth sharing before we move on?
I think for me that it wasn't having a clear vision on what I wanted to do. Like my new shop, I know exactly the direction I'm going to take it in. I know what people want in there, what brands I want in there, what I want to do photo shoot wise. I've got it mapped out before the doors even open. When we opened the first place, it was great from a learning perspective, but we probably lost 5 years of progress fumbling around trying to figure it out. Whereas if we'd spent a bit of time and said, like, right, this is our target audience, this is our market we want to aim at, and this is where we want to market ourselves, it would have been better. Not that we've done wrong, because I've learned some valuable lessons by doing it that way. But I think if I can give you advice, is before you open, figure out who you want to be in your shop.
Yeah, good shot.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great point. I think like almost like related to that, I think that having like a solid foundation about like the environment that you cut in, and just really, I talk about it like it's football, like grassroots, like just your everyday bread and butter that are coming in your shop. That needs to be the most important thing for me. And whether that's from the environment, the salon, how clean the salon is, how it looks, like the everything like that. I think that's for me is the biggest thing with this whole journey, because ultimately, if you haven't got those customers that are coming in your shop, you've got nothing. Like
We don't get to do our job, do we?
We don't get to do our
job. You need to be a community hero before you're a stage hero. Like it's, because that's where you learn. Like we were saying last night, that's where not you make your mistakes, but that's where you get to test the waters. Like before you come and do stuff here, you spend time in your shop with your clients, practicing techniques, using tools, shooting social media to promote yourself. If you didn't have that community that trusted you and put money in your till, we wouldn't have what we've got here.
Yeah. That's it. You see, people will watch us on stage, and like if they're young barbers, they'll be like, oh, I want to be on stage. And I don't think that sometimes they don't see the journey and the whole foundation that go with being on stage. And we're working stylists. We still cut hair, still do appointments every single day. And it's like, it's easy to kind of come to these sort of shows and then just want that without having to see the journey. So I think that, I think it's really important.
People want the end 5%. They want the end result. They don't want the work that goes into it.
I think it's really interesting that you're saying that there is a drive in you that you go, I want to do my own thing. And then you need to just stop and construct what that looks like or what it feels like. And then directly after that, you're then kind of going, well, who's my tribe? Who are the people that are going to come and enjoy this with me?
Yeah.
And you can, I don't know if that's happening often enough with young stores opening up. They're kind of like, I've done my training. I want to open a shop. This is what I'm meant to do. They open it up and it looks a bit like the one three doors down.
I had a guy that works for me, and he was like, I'm thinking about opening a shop, my own shop. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like, I'll support you. But why do you want to do that? Like, what is your reasoning? And we sat down, we talked about it. And in the end, he decided that actually I'm more better off being here and like enjoying this journey together. Yeah. And I was like, because if it's a financial reason that you want to open your own shop, it's probably not the route you want to go down.
Money rent in a chair.
Man, you do not make more money in your production at all. All you do is incur costs.
Yeah,
and you got to gear up for it. I've had so many conversations about barbers that, you know, for a variety of reasons have crossed the threshold. And are now paying that 20% tax that none of us really enjoy, but that happened. And they're not celebrating, I'm so successful, I've crashed through 100,000, I'm aiming for my second 100,000 or whatever it is. It is that kind of like, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it is a matter of, you know, recognizing that there are costs, there are headaches, there are problems with opening up a business. But getting through that is the journey. You know, I did a year or so with that where we hadn't hit the threshold. We hit the threshold, if I'm honest. I think year three was probably the toughest year, where we're like, oh, we're doing like 80 grand. This is good. We suddenly jump to turning over 110, 115. And I'm like, oh, this is a headache. And it took a year for us to get it up to 150, 160 and beyond. And you're like, it's worth it. But sometimes you've got to climb that fence.
Yeah, and I think that's what barbers struggle with, because we kind of hit a limit quicker than hairdressers, because depending on what town you're in, I mean, we're £30 a haircut, £30 a haircut, £40 a hair and beard. You can't really go much more than that. So once your chairs are full and you're full capacity and you're charging what you charge, your only option, unless you want to open up more salons, is to put your price up, but then people aren't going to come in. So that's where barbers struggle, because they're through the VAT threshold. they're charging top whack for the haircuts, and all the chairs are full. So then it's like, right, well, we've either got to open another shop to offset it, or we've got to work out another way to bring more money in. And that's where retail comes in, training comes in. But I think that's where the education for barbers needs to come into play.
Yeah. I mean, it is a difficult thing that you're getting, you'll get lots of salon. Yeah, look at the salon prices.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you will find a £30 haircut in a salon. But even for gents, you'll see £100 plus haircut. Yeah. And we can't do that yet.
No.
So there is a point that you can stay within a business and be just as successful.
Oh, 100%.
And probably find the doors to Show Work magazine, editor, and other things more profitable. Let's move on to another bit, because I'm going to come back to products as well in a minute. But I want to talk about the fact that we've covered youngsters that are wanting to, or people wanting to open their first barbershop up. The celebrity barber and the celebrity clients and all that kind of thing, where everyone believes, you cut someone who's playing for Manchester United, and they're paying you what, £3,500 for a haircut?
I wish it was three and a half.
Your old Trafford, you're doing a couple of the boys. What are you walking away with £7,000-£8,000 in your pocket? Pouring it into the boot of the Porsche.
Do you know what? That is probably the biggest misconception about celebrity barbers. Like, I don't even like the term celebrity barber, but like, footballers are clients at the end of the day. And I'll be honest, obviously I charge more for footballers, but it's relative. I try and base my prices on my time.
Yeah.
So if I'm out for a day in Manchester, Manchester's about an hour and 20 from where I live. If I'm out for a day and I'm doing fortunately, I cut a few at Manchester United now, so I'm cutting 5-6 at a time at United. So it makes it beneficial financially for me. But yeah, you've got to obviously put your price up. It's not as like lucrative as what.
No. That's it.
Everyone thinks.
But that's the problem, and it's this problem you get with owning businesses. People that work for you think you're a millionaire, and you think you've got more money than me, you dickhead. Yeah.
No, but I do think there is interesting. It's nice. Thank you for sharing, because I do think it's really interesting that no one really believes it. Do you know what I mean? And we spoke to Mark McIver, Slider Cuts, who's got some amazing people coming into his store, and he's like, no, they come into the shop, I charge them what I charge everyone else. Why am I going to essentially rip them off?
Well, it's like Cal says, you've got to pack up all your stuff, you've got to drive to Manchester or drive wherever, then you've got to tidy up, you've got to take it back, set up your shop. It's just as easy to do 10 haircuts in your comfortable salon with all your stuff set up.
I'll be honest, I base it on how much I would usually earn in a day in the salon. And if I can doctor it so I cover that cost, then that's it. Because at the end of the day as well, they are just humans.
Yeah.
They're not going to want to pay £500 for a haircut.
The exposure is more valuable than the price you charge.
Like, because if I charge them £500 a haircut, you'll get another barber that will do their hair for free simply because they want to cut their hair. So it's a balancing act between gaining that respect and relationship with them, that they still want to pay you enough to cover your costs. You got to remember that these sort of people are surrounded by yes men. They're surrounded by people that will just do everything for them for free. And that is the biggest thing that I've learned through cutting celebrities, is that you need to know your worth, because there are so many people that will just spend
over
backwards
for them. That's a big mistake you get with brands. And I'm probably going to get shot down by a lot of brands in here now for saying this, but you get a lot of young barbers that will do stage work for free, social media for free. And the problem is, once you start going down that route, you're screwed. Because the minute you say, I'll go cut on stage for you for absolutely nothing, they've got you. Yeah. And it's like, and then when you go, oh, actually, I want to charge this, they're like, oh, that's a bit of a jump from doing it for free. So it's tough sometimes to tell a new barber to say, this is what you should charge. Because they'll go, oh, God, I can't charge that. They're not going to pay me that. And you think sometimes walking away is better than taking a hand.
And to be honest, if that person doesn't want to pay it, or that brand doesn't want to pay it, there's a brand that will want to pay it.
Yeah.
And you find that if you do know your worth, that's one thing I've learned in the last few years. If you just stick by it and know your worth, then people will pay it, and people respect that.
Yeah.
And they almost respect it a little bit more, I think.
But you've got your integrity, haven't you? You're not just selling out to the highest bidder, and you're not just doing it for exposure. Like we've both got kids, and it's... If I'm going to give my time to someone, it's got to come at a price, because the price for me is not seeing my kids.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to do the work. I'm willing to earn the money, but it's got to come at a cost, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, I've been cutting hair 18, 19 years now. Like, I can't do work for free anymore. There's very important things in my life and in your life and in your life that if there's going to be a trade-off, it has to be valuable. If I turn around to my wife and say, I'm going to work for free today, she'll go, no, you're fucking not.
I think, I mean, I said this to Simon earlier on over the weekend. I kind of always liked the fact that they're very public about signing a contract, that it's an official business relationship rather than, you know, I'm chucking you a bone.
Yeah.
Any first time nerves with a couple of celebrities? Anyone you've been a bit in awe of? I've got to ask it. I'm only going to get grief if I don't. Anyone you kind of got a bit overexcited that you're going to go and cut?
Do you know what? When I first started cutting footballers, right, I was like in awe of them because I've been a football fan since I was little.
Sure.
Now, for me, footballers, I'm like, I've recently started cutting Bruno Fernandes, the captain of Man United. I've been a Man United fan since I was like little. And yeah, in the last year, I started cutting Bruno. And I'm like, it's just Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
It kind of dilutes it for me, but there's been occasions that I have cut, I'll tell this story. I've told it a few times, but I got a call from a barber in LA and he asked me if I would go and cut one of his clients' hair in London. And I didn't know who it was at the time. And I was like, I obviously asked a fee and stuff and sorted out the price. And then I was like, I'll go and do it. And then I was like, who is it, by the way? And he was like, it's a singer called Charlie Puth. And I was like, no way. Like, this guy's like won like Grammys and he's actually got the most streamed song on YouTube from the See You Again song off Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Oh,
and
shit.
I was like, no way. So I turned up at this recording studio, literally a recording studio in the middle of London. And the mixing desk was there. It was just him and me in this recording studio. And he plunked the chair down and I cut his hair. Like, and then we had a chat and he was telling me that he's friends with like Bieber and Kanye and that. And I was just like, this is mad. And
Cal loves his music as well.
So like, I play music and I love music. And I was telling him this. And then he was like, have you got a shoot back? And I was like, well, no, I just literally got the train down to cut your hair. And then I'm going to go back after. And he was like, I'll play you something if you want. So he comes, he gets off the stool and gets on this piano. And it's literally just me and him in this room. And he starts like playing a song on this piano. And I was just like, this is mad. Like,
mad.
It's mad how Barbara has brought me to this point. Yeah. It's crazy.
That's brilliant. Well, I think that's it. And I love the fact with Man United set of players that they essentially are clients. And that relate. And on top of everything else, that relationship that it isn't like, I'm coming into that. You're like, hey boys, I'm ready.
And
that's the nice thing about our industry.
Yeah,
is it becomes very kind of intimate and very close with your clients quickly.
That's the thing.
You get normal people, don't you?
I've got like good relationships with all my football clients' families. Like Bruno, I've been cutting his kids' hair. Like it's very much a personal thing, and I think social media has got a way of kind of glamorizing everything when in reality it's just normal life just our job. And I think that is the beauty of what we do as well, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's it. You know paupers to princes, everyone needs their haircut, so you do cover it. That obviously you know if you're putting up a celebrity haircut that you've done, it gets a huge amount of following. But you know, you look at what the guys for like haircuts for homeless are doing.
Yeah,
it gets equal traction across social media.
Yeah.
So it all just comes down to that connection, that haircut, that skill.
Absolutely.
Which can get forgotten about when you're starting up.
Well, they've got to sit in your chair at the end of the day, regardless of who they are. And when you're saying about like the people that will do it for free, they might go see them once and get their haircut as like a bit of a free trim. But if all they're getting is fanboys all the time, like, oh my God, you're Bruno Fernandes. Like, he's going to feel, I can't deal with this all the time.
Like, I just want a haircut.
Yeah, that's it. They want you to be on a level. Like, they want, I cut a few of the Love Island Boys and Diversity Dance Group. They come in the shop because they don't want the kind of come down to my studio or come here, because they'll come in, they'll spend time with the clients. But the first time I come in, what I do with most new clients of that caliber is I'll do the first one for free. And then after that, they pay it. And when I come back, all of them have turned around and gone, no, we'll pay full price, because it's, they just want to be normal people, especially the Love Island lot, because they weren't normal people before they went on TV. Like Liam Reid knew how I do. He was a builder. He was a bricklayer. Now
but
he
these
comes
guys
in.
Become, and I guess really, I mean, it's not so dissimilar with footballers, although obviously there's that kind of years of building for it. But they're kind of plunged into this kind of spotlight and this abnormality really quite quickly and really quite young without any sort of prep.
Well, you look
and so they are still just, they are just still fellas.
And you look at what barbering is for most men. It's almost like a bit of a therapy session. And especially like the A-list celebrities. For them, they probably want to come in and just relax and kind of be around normal people. Like where they're in the spotlight day in, day out, signing stuff, getting like fans shout stuff and whatever. They want to spend time with you and just be chilled out and just relax.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Got a season ticket?
No, but I get to go whenever. Like I get the best seats in the house.
I was gonna say that's that one.
Although,
Bruno.
Like I will say, I'm allowed to say this. It's not great viewing at the minute. It hasn't been for the last year. So
I was gonna say, all of a sudden, everyone's a Liverpool fan.
That's it.
It's an awkward conversation where, like, because they know, obviously, you know, I'm a Man United fan. I'll turn up, and then we've like lost the final of the Europa League. And it's like, right, it's crap, isn't it? Like,
love it.
Cheers, boys.
Did you get any City fans? Any City players
calling you? I caught one of the.
You step across.
I do caught one of the City players. I caught Mateo Kovacic. So,
bit of rivalry going on.
Yeah. First thing that I dropped in was that I was a United fan, though. So.
Didn't turn up in your red shirt.
No.
Love it. So. The third kind of, I guess, trinity in this is products and brands and collaborations. And that seems to be the other aspect of the kind of aspiration of young barbers.
Yeah.
I've spoken to so many people that either want their own brand or are doing their kind of their branding on products and or ambassadors or linked and so on. Obviously, your product's launched now.
Yeah. Launched about 3 months ago now.
Has that been fun? Is that the right word for it?
It's been great. For the last few years, I've worked with product brands as ambassador, affiliate. Financially, it's been amazing because I've just been kind of paid to make content for these brands. But there was no longevity for me. It was just more a transaction. I wanted something that I could like build for the future and that's something that was a little bit more me. So yeah, we decided to create this brand, House of Wax, and we decided developing this about a year and a half ago whilst I was working alongside other brands. I was in the background, I was like doing my research I ended my relationships with the brands I was working with, like obviously amicably, we kind of just then launched it and it's been amazing. It's been so good.
I'm at a bit of a crossroads at night. It's just a tough one for me because There's obviously business opportunities that are arising and there's kind of authenticity opportunities that are arising. So what I'm boiling down to at the moment is I'm kind of using who I want to use, like who they're all good. Like most product brands now are good standard. So for me, it's kind of like I've got House of Wax, Cows Give Me Some House of Wax, and it's the clients love it. And then we'd be using Statement, American Crew, like Fawcett stuff. So for me, I'm kind of going down. I'm kind of, like whoring myself out a little bit with the product range. And it's a thing of like, I'm kind of cherry picking what I want from each range. And I don't really want to go down the route of like, I'm just using you. Because for me, it's like Captain Fawcett's beard group like stuff but on myself. I use it myself. So to stop that in the shop for me makes sense because I use it. I know it works. I stand behind it. I'm going to sell it to my clients.
That's what's amazing though. Like I was talking to Richie earlier and I was obviously saying like we'd launch the brand and we don't do beard oils. And like I said to him, I was like, look, like send me some beard oils and I'll try them out and I'll use them as well. So that's, like you said, there's a product for everyone. Yeah. Like I don't think that...
Because you could go down the route, I can say, right, I'm going to sign a contract with you for X amount of money and I'm just going to use your stuff. But then if another company bring out a product that's better or equally as good, you think, oh, it's hard. Like clippers, I've always used the clippers I use from day dot. So for me, it makes sense. Stand behind them. I'll always use them in my career. Products are slightly different because they're constantly evolving. Mm. So it's, for me, like I'm in talks with different people at the moment. I'm not going to drop who it is, but there's few people I'm talking to. And for me, it's really got to sit right that I think I'm 100% dedicated.
But I guess the hard bit is that you find yourself I know, whoring yourself out a little bit. You're like, yeah, this is great wax.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to keep it real. It's got to be authentic.
Yeah,
and you've got to believe in
it.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, your clients are the ones buying it. So for me, it can't just make sense for me to use it because I'm getting paid to use it. It's got to make sense that it's at a good enough price for my clients and they're going to buy it.
Yeah, because they're the ones that are going to come back in and tell you it's shit if it's shit. So it's like,
so if I say, like, right, I'm using this, I'm doing stage work from them, they're paying me this, but then I've got to sell it for 30 quid in my shop.
Yeah.
A client's not going to buy it. So I've got all this retail sitting and stocks not selling.
Yeah.
So it's got, everything's got to link up for me. And it's that's one thing I've not ticked off in the shop at the moment.
Yeah, difficult. And House of Wax, is that, are you obviously in love with the product, but do you see there's more to add to it? Is that a journey, do you think?
100%. Like, so at the minute, we've actually got a couple more products that we haven't launched in the first capsule, just because we want to keep drip feeding these products out.
Yeah.
The first drop of the capsule has been amazing. Like, we've sold out twice now since we launched, and we kind of want to keep that momentum. But at the same time, I think with hair styling products, there's kind of only so much you can release. Like, there's so many different products you can release, and we just want to gradually do it.
It's very, very small range, isn't it?
Yeah, so at the minute we've got a powder, an essential clay, which is like a dry clay, and then a sea salt spray.
And spend a lot of time playing around with stuff, or did you have favorites? You're like, this is good, but I'd like it drier, I'd like this. Has there been tweaking, or have you really found your favourite, your perfect formulas?
No, it took ages to it took ages to perfect the
I
formulas.
I think the best thing Cal's done is that he's, as much as it's not Cal Newsom on the butt, you know it's your brand. Like, you're, like, the way it looks, the way it smells, like, you're banging to your fragrances.
Yeah,
like, you love your fragrances. And that's one thing I've noticed of all the product. The minute you open them, my clients have gone, Jesus, that smells nice.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time on scent, and like you say, I'm really into my perfumes, fragrances. So that is one thing, because I find that products, the first thing people do when they open a product is smell it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's attention to detail as well, like the way you dress, where you hold yourself, where you are on stage. The attention to detail. Your pots have all got like the embossed kind of risen graphics on them, and it's, you feel it in your hand first. Like, it touches all the touch. You've got smell, you've got look. Yeah. Hopefully not taste, but then you've got the feel in your hair, like afterwards. So it's kind of, you can tell it's aesthetically linked to you before you even look into it.
I appreciate that feedback.
But mate, the journey for that, I mean, like I say, I speak to so many people that are like, I want to do a product. I mean, I think the biggest, the big ones that come to me are, I want to do our own product range.
Yeah.
Or we've got our own product range, maybe white label, maybe something like that. Or I want a franchise. These are all these.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does feel like you're kind of jumping rather than walking towards your goal.
Yeah.
But you, it just felt like the right next thing for you. And
I think
that you'd worked with so many products, you knew in your head, you knew what you wanted.
Do you know what it is for me? If I work with any brands, right, I'm always trying to keep it as kind of real to what I'm doing as possible, and to suit my aesthetic, suit my whole social media content. And I was getting to a point where, I was like, these brands do suit what I'm doing, but it just wasn't me.
Yeah.
And like, I think it was just the right time with the way that, like, my following's gone now on TikTok and Instagram. Like, it was getting to it. Like, across both platforms now, I've just hit 750,000 followers. So I was like, it's now the right time for me to kind of launch this, benefit financially from it, and build something that I can, like, that'll stand the test of time. Because, I'm kind of building other people's brands for them.
But
it's not even, they're not even really fitting to me, so it was just the right time.
Yeah.
Just timing.
Cool. I mean, retail in stores is always a bit of a bugbear, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think when you mention retail to barbershop owners, they're kind of like, non-existent and so on. Is that something you're taking on board with your new shop and with the brand itself?
Yeah, and it's that. Like you
when
say,
you approach it with, we are going to have a retail aspect to our business.
And that's why, like, for me, it's got to be right across the board. Because the minute one of my barbers goes, oh, it's 28 quid for that product, you've lost your client. Like, I need to be confident enough in that product that's inside that tin to go, it's 28 quid because it's a fucking nuts. Like, this is going to style your hair exactly how you want it to style. I fully believe in that product. That's why it's that much. Whereas that's what we've lacked over the years, like, especially with, I'm not knocking white label, like, I've used them, like, I've used them in a large shop. But that's why I've come away from it, because there's some products that are very good in them, but then there's parts of the range that aren't good in them. So it's, they're great for making profit, they're great for making margins on your retail, but actual client usage, I think they lack that integrity sometimes that you get with brands and doing your own range and stuff.
I think it's so important to do something that is like different. And because, like you said, there's so many people that do white label, there's so many different brands out there. You need to do something that is different, because otherwise,
it's very important not to put your name on it. I mean, you kind of, everyone's own brand has got their name all over it.
Yeah, I can't think, like, for me, like, I think it's different with a shop, because Dean's, rightly so, built his own brand in his name. And I think if I was in your position now with a shop, I would do exactly the same, because it's easier to build a personal brand than it is to build a shop brand.
Well, for me, the reason I've gone down that route is because
the new shop's going to be called...
It's just Dean Gleeson here, So,
and, sorry, I didn't know if you'd released
that. Yeah, no, no, Ed.
You have now.
Exclusive. So it's Dean Gleeson here. But the reason I've done that is because I educate up and down the country. So with Mengo, like the last shop, in our town, we're very well known. Like, I'd hold ourselves as one of the best shops in Lee on Sea, but... if we opened up in Braintree, Colchester, people probably wouldn't know who it was. Whereas if I open up a Dean Gleeson hair in Lee and I open up a Dean Gleeson hair in, I don't know, Shrewsbury, Brentwood, ever, I am transferable because I go there myself and I'm on social media. So it's easier for me to market that. If I want to go down the route of 3, 4, 5 shops, it's going to be easier for me to plant them in places because I've got them connections there. I'm transferable on social media. Whereas if I called it a random name now, I've got to rebuild that brand, let people know that I'm behind it. Obviously, it's got its flaws in the fact that I'm effectively the face of the business still. So if I do want to step away from it, there's that transition. But I mean, it's worked for Sassoon, Tony, and Guy.
Our brand, we've called our brand to Laban London is our barbershop. And I'm not in there, I now work in I've got one store I work in, and that's that. It is Andy Laban, that's me, that's where I'm based. And just removing the first name has kind of, it's still got that association, but they're not, it's not expected that I'm in the chair, in there behind the chair, and the guys can get on with their jobs. Before we wrap this up, I just want to have a little quick run through about training and teaching and education, because everyone seems to be educating online at the moment. I've never seen so many schools and business courses online. How do you choose? I mean, you guys educate beautifully from a good background. How, as a listener, are you going to find what's good for you and what's right for you?
I mean, we kind of complement each other quite nice, because especially in the social media platforms, obviously Cal's social media following is huge and he's got great opportunities that pay directly through social media. Whereas my education for social media comes more of how you can attract brands. So I don't get paid directly through social media, but the work that I do has enabled me to work with brands that then pay me to produce work for them. So it complements each other nicer. As much as we're on stage cutting hair and educating, there's this whole new level now that a lot of the stuff, even internally with the team, we're teaching them how to kind of elevate that social media game, because you either lean into it or you get left behind.
Yeah.
And I think people have gone down this route of trying to do what you've done successfully, and they want to be this famous Instagram barber that earns thousands of pounds, but it's not always possible. But then when you say to them, that's not the only route you can take, they go, oh shit, I could work with brands and social media and stuff. So it's tough.
It's, again, it just leads into what we were saying before. Like, you've got to know the route you want to take, and you've got to do what's right for you. There's so many people doing education, and I think that education is the most important thing that you could do. Investing in learning, like, I'll hold a class, and if I'm not learning something from that class, from the people I'm teaching, if I'm not learning something, then it's a failure for me. You can learn something from everyone. So, and I think the way the industry's gone now, everyone is an educator.
Yeah.
But you've got to look at people, and you've got to ask yourself why you want to learn from that person. Yeah. And the thing that I love about the team that we're on at Wall is that everyone's kind of got something that is different, and everyone, you can learn something from everyone.
And we've got we've got some exciting opportunities coming up this year that we can't talk too much about it, but like, me, Mick and Cal are going off to LA this year to work on a project. And we're now sitting down and thinking, all right, how can we make this exciting and engaging to be educated from, because the kind of classroom kind of scenario is getting left behind now. So we've got to think like, right, we're absolutely buzzing to be going on this trip. So how can we make that transferable to the audience and make it educational for them that they want to lean into it and then learn from it?
It's like a prime example. I've followed Josh LaMonica, has been an idol of mine for years, since I started cutting hair. And if you'd have asked me to cut alongside Josh LaMonica and educate alongside Josh LaMonica 3 or 4 years ago, I'd have been like, no way. Why would I want to educate alongside Josh LaMonica? He's the best in the game. But what I've sort of realized is that actually, yeah, like we've both got something to offer. Yeah. I do something completely different to what Josh does.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to, like, it's not announced yet, but we're actually going to do a class in the next few months together. Yeah, it's gonna be amazing. But it excites me rather than scares me, because I've just realised that, yeah, I've got something different to what Josh has got.
Yeah.
And everyone can learn something from me that maybe they can't learn from Josh, even though he is the best educator in the world. And like, technically, it's like, that's the beauty of the industry. I think that everyone's got something to offer. But I do think that it's important not to try and replicate other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of education, I see a lot of people educating, trying to replicate other people in the industry, and I just don't think that works. You've got to do your own thing.
Yeah, you go and do a 5-day course somewhere and try and condense it into 3 days on your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, guys, thank you so much. Pleasure. In the kind of madness of this and how busy you are, to come and talk to me.
Pleasure.
Good luck with Dean Gleason hair,
thank
the physical
much.
Peel. Good luck with the product range.
Thank
I'm
you very
looking
much,
forward
cheers.
To trying it and looking forward to seeing it expand and grow.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time. We've been The Noble Barber. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to The Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.